Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mass graves of hundreds of people are turning up at hospitals all over the Gaza Strip. Scores are killed in Rafah before the full-scale invasion even begins. In the West Bank, pogroms have got the whole territory burning and dozens are killed or wounded. Meanwhile, the most wanted resistance fighter in the West Bank, pronounced dead 2 days ago, has just been resurrected and turned up to a tumultuous welcome amongst the masses there. And the United States Congress finally sends scores of billions of dollars to Ukraine, Taiwan, and to Israel. What could possibly go wrong? Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be the mother of all talk shows.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Another Sunday and World War III has not yet started. But did it become closer as a result of the decision wildly cheered, not by the people of America, who could rather have done with the $80 billion that Congress finally sent to Taiwan, to Ukraine, and to the Netanyahu government of Israel? Even though the Netanyahu government of Israel is rapidly falling apart, Ben-Gvir savagely attacking Gantz this very day, the war cabinet is at war with itself in Tel Aviv. Even though the money sent to Taiwan wouldn't last 5 minutes if China really wanted to take its province back into the People's Republic. But the money that has gone to Ukraine might well be a precursor to all-out war between the superpowers in the eastern part of Europe, allowing, as it will, the kind of missile technology which will inevitably lead to the destruction of the Crimea Bridge, which Russia may well decide is the ultimate red line for her. But let's stay in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank for a moment. You remember when, I'm old enough to remember, when it was a blood libel to suggest that Israel would attack Palestinian hospitals in the Gaza Strip. Do you remember? It was a Hamas rocket that misfired. Do you remember? Do you remember the Western media, foremost amongst them, the lying, twisted British media? Thank God you can't bribe or twist them. When you see what they'll do unbribed, you realise there's no reason to. You remember the British media telling you you were an anti-Semite if you suggested that Israel would bomb a hospital? Well, it's bombed every hospital. It's destroyed every hospital. That much you already knew. But now you know, at least if you're on social media, that they are uncovering mass graves in the Nasser medical complex in the last few hours. Dozens of graves, dozens of bodies have been uncovered. In the Shifa hospital complex, the mass grave has now reached 700 people in body bags, Israeli body bags, shot in the back of the head, executed at close quarters, usually with their arms tied behind their backs. A massacre of unimaginable proportions of people who were in a hospital, either as patients or as doctors or as nurses or as technicians. 700 dead bodies so far in that mass grave. Mass graves are turning up all over Gaza. now that the Israeli occupation force has largely withdrawn from the ground in the territory. These mass graves will shame not just Israel, that is beyond shame, but will shame the Western leaders who have given it all of the wherewithal, all of the diplomatic cover at the United Nations and in other fora, often as banal as the Eurovision Song Contest, and even more banal, the so-called Paris, so-called Olympic Games. The Western leaders and their oppositions, for the most part, bipartisan support for the murderers in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in Germany. It is a truly mark of shame, a shame that will never go away, a shame that will haunt the politicians responsible for the rest of their natural lives, and I dearly hope on the Judgment Day itself. These mass graves and the massacre yet to come in Rafah, where the pledge has been made by the United States to allow Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and the other rampaging terrorist gang to assault a tent city of well over 1 million people, perhaps as many as 1.6 million people. Given that 80% of all the houses have been destroyed or damaged in the Gaza Strip, most of them are living in tents. Many of them are living without tents, in doorways and on the streets. A mass invasion of Rafah will turn out to be one of the greatest massacres of modern times, not seen since the Second World War. It will make Fallujah look like a Vickers tea party. But it's going ahead, and the United States have given the green light to it. They've given the green light to it in exchange for an end to the tit-for-tat between Israel and Iran. Of course, if you only watch the mainstream media, you don't know that there was a tit that begot a tat. You think the tat was all there was. You didn't know that Israel had destroyed the Iranian embassy in Damascus. If you watch the British Parliament, you certainly don't know that Israel had destroyed the Iranian embassy in Damascus. You thought, if you only watched the Parliament Channel, if you only watched the BBC and ITV, you thought that Iran woke up one morning and decided to send an armada of drones all the way to Israel to futilely bombard it. But in exchange for an end to that tit-for-tat, Biden has given the green light to a mass assault on Rafah, which I promise you now will be the mother of all battles, but it will also be the mother of all slaughters. You will never have seen anything like the Israeli gang invasion of the tent city of Rafah. The United States stooped even lower in the United Nations this week, vetoing a proposal supported by everybody else except the cowards, the United Kingdom and Switzerland, to admit Palestine to full membership of the United Nations. An entirely cosmetic affair, by the way, would have changed absolutely nothing if they had allowed that resolution to go through, if the British had not been so spineless as the authors of the whole Palestinian tragedy in the first place, if they had not been so spineless as to abstain from voting, and Switzerland had not been so crazy as to throw away its long and much vaunted neutral status by abstaining on this measure, it would have changed absolutely nothing. It would have made President Mahmoud Abbas, aged 91, and in his dotage, presiding over nothing more or less than active collaboration with the Israeli massacres of his own people. It's taken me a long time to say what I have just said. I've known Mahmoud Abbas for nearly 40 years. In fact, it was 40 years ago that I first met him. And I have always wanted to avoid exacerbating the tensions that exist within the Palestinian people under occupation. But it can no longer be hidden. 91-year-old Abbas, 25 years beyond the mandate as president that he has an authority which is merely an adjunct, an auxiliary of the Israeli occupation. He is openly intriguing with Western powers to become the ruler of Hamas and the Hamas-operated government in Gaza. He is openly intriguing with them to be given the Gaza Strip at the end of Israel's ethnic cleansing of his own people. And he's not the only Quisling in this pack. The little Quisling in Jordan, a country where more than half of the people are Palestinian people, and where 20% of them are Iraqi people living in exile following the downfall of the Iraqi government following the British and American invasion of their country. Sounds like a pretty shaky nail to hang your royal jacket on to me. But the Jordanian regime allowed its airspace, at least, to the Israeli assailants who tried to destroy Babylon. Imagine the ancient city of Babylon, more ancient than almost any city on the earth, was bombed by Israel this very week using the airspace of the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan. The series of betrayals that began two generations ago by the Jordanian monarchy continues apace, but maybe not for much longer. The situation in Washington has reached fever pitch. The president of the United States, ever more feeble, ever more unable to fulfill even toilet duties in his own White House. His challenger, Donald Trump, is in court after court after court and grilled by a delegation, a deputation from Netanyahu's government, promised to be just as slavish a supporter of Israel first as President Joe Biden is. It was his Republicans, by and large, some brave souls opposed it, but it was his Republicans that allowed the US Congress to pass a eye-watering record bill which gave $80 billion to Taiwan, to Ukraine, and to Israel. All the while, the United States is falling apart. In every street of every city, the fentanyl and opioid epidemic has people walking like zombies down the middle of the road. Bridges fall down at the slightest tap. Highways are pitted as if F-35s had just bombed them. The poverty of the inner cities of America is there for anyone who'd like to see it. But rather than spend $80 billion on the people of America to make America great again, a bipartisan Republican-Democratic effort was made finally at the weekend to get the bill through. Somebody passed amongst them, handing out Ukrainian flags. One of our guests tonight, Colonel McGregor, demanded to know who she was, why she was on the floor of the US Congress. Well, it didn't really matter, because the two cheeks of the same ass in the American political class were all waving them, all of them, waving and cheering exultantly as they robbed the American taxpayer of desperately needed public finance to finance the public realm in the United States. Not putting America first, putting Israel first, putting Ukraine first, putting Taiwan first. Now, the Taiwan money is a mere bagatelle. Some more patriots for the Taiwan puppet regime will make no difference at all if China decides to take back its renegade province. Netanyahu already has as much as he needs, as much as he wants from the United States its military and its treasury. But he got another $26 billion, just in case. That's on top of the £4 billion a year that the 7 million Israelis get every year from the American taxpayer. The $26 billion will have been toasted, no doubt, by the warring cabinet of Benjamin Netanyahu. But the happiest man on the planet is the coke dealer of Volodymyr Zelensky, the now out-of-mandate president of Ukraine. His coke dealer can look forward to the mother of all new subventions. The amount of money that has been sent to Ukraine will no doubt prolong the war, unless the Russians decide it's time, finally, to end it. The Ukrainian armed forces now conscripting women, pregnant women, old men, young boys, will continue to be hurled into the front line, a collapsing front line that may collapse like a house of cards if Russia decides that before this money arrives on the battlefield, it's time to end this conflict once and for all. But Zelensky is definitely strengthened in one way by this new money, because it's going to be used for a whole generation of missiles that can easily destroy the Crimean Bridge. That actually practically makes not much difference, because the land bridge from Russia proper to Crimea, the new addition in 2014 to the Russian Federation, is well established and will not ever be taken back. But symbolically, it will be a very, very grievous blow to the Russians if this money is successfully used to bring down the Crimea Bridge. That's why I believe Russia is now at the end of its strategic patience with Western interference, with NATO incitement in the attempt to defeat and break up the Russian Federation. It's my belief that in Moldova, there will be a significant Russian push to thwart the efforts to drag Moldova into the war. It's why I believe that the Russian armed forces will now turn south towards the liberation of Odessa. And the link up with the renegade province of Moldova by the name of Transnistria, which you probably heard here first at least a year and a half ago. The Russians cannot sit back, while endless subventions of scores of billions of dollars arrive from Washington in the form of new and more terrible military hardware. They have to bring this war to a close, and I believe that they will do so. I've only got time to spend a couple of minutes on the domestic political situation at home. Something is happening in Britain. Something big is happening in Britain. Being a political and election junkie, I spend every Friday morning studying in detail the results of local government by-elections up and down the country. By-elections caused by deaths or resignations or imprisonments, increasingly, of the British political class. Just today, in the Tory heartland of Fylde, a Tory MP resigned from the Conservative Party, having had the whip withdrawn a couple of days ago, charged with extorting money from a 79-year-old Conservative Party official, whom he phoned at 3 a.m. and demanded £5,000 in cash because he was trapped in a flat with what he called bad people. This man, Jenkins, was previously forced to resign from the government of Boris Johnson for a drug deal with a Brazilian drug dealer that went wrong. I'm not making any of this up. This is a Conservative MP at the fag end of a fading, failing Conservative era. Mark Jenkins had to leave the government because of a drug deal with a Brazilian rent boy. I'm not making any of this up. With a Brazilian rent boy that went bad. When he resigned from the government, the Conservative Party made him the trade envoy to Colombia. Colombia! A man that had to leave the government over a drug deal with a Brazilian rent boy. And now he's alleged to have extorted thousands of pounds of Conservative Party campaign funds to get him out of a jam with bad people in a flat, God knows where. I look at these results and I think to myself, with this Conservative government falling apart, Labour must be all set to do well in these local government by-elections, except they're not. Not only are they not winning these local government by-elections, they're not even coming second or third. In last Thursday's by-elections, they came fifth, sixth and seventh in local council by-elections. The meetings I am attending and addressing in Hounslow this week, in Luton this week, in Newcastle this week, are attracting record numbers of people. Many hundreds of people are coming out to hear my message, which is this. Anybody who votes Labour in the elections this year doesn't just have Palestinian blood on their hands. They are rewarding apostasy on a level that simply beggars belief. I used to call Tory and Labour two cheeks of the same arse. But now, those cheeks are indistinguishable, have melded into that middle part that we never talk about. It's the mother of all talk shows. Stay tuned. Top guests, top calls. It's going to be a bumpy night.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
My favorite radio talk show host and political analyst in the whole of the United States of America, the one and only Garland Nixon, joins me now. Garland, it's been a big week, if not for the American taxpayer, then for the beneficiaries of United States taxpayer largesse. That's a lot of money to send overseas when your country is coming apart at the seams, no?
It's a tremendous amount of money. And what we're learning now is that even the 2023 budget of right around $850 billion for the military-industrial complex was still full of hidden figures, because since then we've added another $100 to $110 billion for the Ukraine conflict, and now they're adding basically another $100 billion. So, not including all of the machinations used by the intelligence community that cost hundreds of billions of dollars, we're now well over $1 trillion for our military budget. And now the American people are understanding that whatever astronomical number that they get yearly for the defense budget will be supplemented time and again by the Uniparty, basically.
Yeah, I mean, leaving aside the opportunity cost of all that money, and we'll come back to that, what does this do to the dollar? I mean, this money is just being printed. It's baseless, this money, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, very interestingly, now the Biden administration has moved to the argument that this is going to be good for the economy, that it's going to create jobs. But most economists, generally most economists who are responsible, will tell you that war spending is in and of itself inflationary. When you build a road, it's usable for infrastructure. When you build things that can be used to advance your economic interest, you get a continual return on investment. When you build military objects and war material, you can either store it or you can blow it up. Those are the only two things that you can do. So it is in and of itself inflationary. So what they've done is they've created an environment where, notwithstanding all the terrible things that will happen as a result of the military conflict, we're going to have inflation simply because of all the other money that's being printed. And of course, they're going to have to run around the world to China and whoever else will buy their buy the treasury bills and try to finance this this crazy spending again.
What's going to happen with the Democratic Party's campaign? They were all cheering in the Congress, but the Democrats were cheering loudest. They have transformed themselves into the most, not since the Vietnam War, have I seen a Democratic Party government in power that is more savagely warlike and imperialistic. How does that play with their base?
Not very well. You know, the base of the Democratic Party, they have come to the realization that this is not a party that reflects the morals and the concerns of their so-called constituents, that they are not represented by the by their you know, what would normally be the constituents of the particular party. The other thing I think that is getting more and more clear is that the Democratic Party is now basically in control of the House again, that the two parties have melded together. Speaker Mike Johnson, of course, now will likely be facing a Republican Party that's going to try to unseat him, and the Democrats will have to join in. They will have to give him some votes to save his hide. However, this won't be the last time. So basically now, the only thing that keeps Mike Johnson in power will be Democrat votes, and that I suspect that the Republican base will go after him repeatedly and force the Democrats to bail him out over and over again, and to put an exclamation on the mark on the point that he is completely divorced from the foundation of the Republican Party.
Turning to them, then, of course, there were remnants of America First in the Congress, but key Republicans are now indistinguishable from the Democrats. They look, as George Orwell put it, from pig to man, from man to pig, and can no longer tell the difference.
Yeah, I think the difference in the two parties is that in the Republican Party, there is an element that I can't really call them anti-war per se, but I can say that there is an element in the Republican Party that is less inclined to conflict, that wants to turn down the volume, particularly in Ukraine, and to some extent that wants to turn down the volume in other parts of the world. So the Democratic Party is fully on board with the neocons. The Democratic Party is now basically the Republican Party of 2004. We now have the Republican Party of George Bush fully in control of the Democratic Party. And if you look, you'll see the same exact people who supported that party, who many of them who were speechwriters, who were literally worked within the Bush administration, the second Bush administration, are now hardcore supporters of the Biden administration. But as I said, the Republican Party still has an element there that opposes this. I think that's the main difference between the two parties.
Well, let's break down the various theaters. Let's start with Gaza. First of all, tell us what's going on the campuses of the United States. The proximate reason for my question being the call for the National Guard to come on the campus of a Columbia University. Those of us old enough to remember Kent State University know just what could go wrong there.
Well, the numbers are overwhelming. I think somewhere considerably less than 20% of Americans under 30 years old support Joe Biden's Gaza policies. So we see that young America has completely abandoned the Biden administration. Now, what we see is like such as places as Columbia University, students who have, you know, basically gone all out. Now they're occupying areas of the campus. I've seen videos where they've gone around the campus and put up signs. You know, there'll be the name of a building and they'll change the name of the building to a place in Gaza to Khan Yunis or whatever. So they're taking considerable actions. We see on the West Coast closing down the Golden Gate Bridge and doing a number of things. So the young Americans are really pushing back against the conflict. Something else that I think is interesting, and that is I've had a number of people who had previously applied or previously considered joining the military 4 or 5 years ago say now they're getting calls that like the military is going out, reaching back to people who tried 4 and 5 years ago to try to re-recruit them in. I think the military, most people don't really know the numbers now, but I think the military is having an extremely difficult time in recruiting because the young people are basically saying we won't fight for the United States. We're not comfortable with the policy anymore. And I'll end by saying this, which means how does the United States go out and start World War III? How do they go out and start a war when if the United States were to start some massive war and say, OK, that's it, we're going to have to do a draft, that millions of young Americans would absolutely refuse to do it. They would not have the support. The U.S. could not do a draft right now. Absolutely. The country would fall apart.
Nonetheless, your government has apparently, and I think I have it on good authority, they've given a green light for an assault on Rafah, which will make Fallujah look like a walk in the park. And this is presumably to reward Israel for ending the tit-for-tat with Iran.
Well, you know, when we hear that the U.S. has given Israel a green light, or that the U.S. The Biden administration is at odds with the Israeli leadership over something. You know, I'm very suspicious about that because we recently stories came out that Joe Biden had said he was in favor of a two-state solution. That was what he said, you know, publicly, and that privately there were messages going, you know, that he had sent that absolutely he wasn't. So it was just as Hillary Clinton had said, he has a public position and a private position. I really suspect, and more people are starting to suspect, that the Biden administration is aligned with the Netanyahu plan. With the most extreme factions in the Israeli government, and basically they are trying to pretend as though they're pushing back to keep the heat off. So I don't think the Biden administration is opposed to it, or that they have to green light it. I think they're on board and they're all plotting together to see how they can get this accomplished.
Well, let's come out of the frying pan and dive into the fire. The money that's going to Ukraine is likely to escalate, perhaps in one last desperate throw of missile attacks, the ability of the Kiev regime to take territory is virtually zero. But their ability to take the war to Russia with this new money maybe will trigger a Russian response that you might say will be wholly disproportionate.
You know, I would look at, you know, to evaluate that, I would compare that with what's happening with Iran. And that is that both Iran and Russia understand that they're winning. And they understand that because they're winning, their adversaries are desperate and trying to provoke them to take some action that may be considered over the top, some action that their adversaries could then point to and say they're irrational and unreasonable. And so I think Russia is prepared for some kind of attacks. I think they're prepared to absorb them. I think a Russia we're looking at now slowly, village after village is falling. Russia is on the move and they're winning. So in the same way that very wisely the Iranians absorbed a minor attack from, or one may call it a symbolic attack from the Israelis and just shook it off, seeing that they were winning, why mess up if you're winning? I think the Russians, while we may bother them, while they will highly protest, I think they are prepared to absorb more hits. They understand that the desperation of their adversaries and their losing will cause them to reach out. But I think they're going to continue to take their victories on the battlefield. And again, I'll end this up by saying this. In a way, one of the worst things that could have happened to the Biden administration is to get this money, because they're going to get this money and argue to their constituents that now they'll be able to stop the Russians and now they'll win. There'll be an expectation of victory, an expectation of some kind of a military success. What happens if they get this money and the next couple of months things fall apart and people are unhappy enough with the money going out? And then they say, wait a minute. You told us this money was going to make a difference, and Ukraine fell anyway. In the long run, I don't think it's going to benefit the narrative of the Biden administration.
Finally, Garland, where stands Donald Trump this fine spring day?
Well, I'll put it like this. He's in a difficult position because the intelligence machine is doing everything they can to take Donald Trump out. They're trying their best to take Donald Trump out. They're throwing the kitchen sink at him. Donald Trump, let me just say this, just like it's similar to what's happening in Ukraine and Israel. Donald Trump stands to win right now. Joe Biden is confused. He's saying his father was eaten by cannibals. I don't know what's going on with this guy. He's completely lost it. But Donald Trump is sitting here. All he has to do is kind of continue the fight and stay available until November. And I think he wins this very easily. So Donald Trump, the fact of the matter is this. I hear people who are very much opposed. I do radio and a lot of different venues, so I get a lot of different callers. I hear people who are very much opposed to Donald Trump still absolutely admit, well, yeah, clearly they're just going after Donald Trump to stop him from winning. So it's clear to most people that what we're looking at is lawfare. This is not harming Donald Trump. It's not harming his numbers at all. And I also think that some very powerful people are starting to come to the conclusion that Donald Trump is going to win, and they're going to start climbing on the Trump bandwagon because, hey, everybody's going to get on a train once it's left the station. And I think the Trump train is moving downhill towards November, the election in November.
I said finally, but really finally, who were these dreadful cannibals that ate President Biden's uncle?
I think they exist with a corn pop and the other made up figures that Joe Biden has conjured over the course of the year. So yeah, people now are accustomed to Joe Biden's many slip ups and his confusion. So cannibals, it's just Joe Biden.
Even by his standards, it was quite a slip up. Garland Nixon, thank you very much indeed for your wisdom and your humor. Garland Nixon, radio talk show host, political analyst, and the coolest cat in America. Dan McQueen says, I can't stop seeing that little girl phoning for help as the IDF intentionally murdered her. And Stephen Bowen says, you do understand that Trump is a crook, right? Are you trying to say Trump shouldn't be tried for crimes? Get off, Stephen. Who are you trying to kid? You want to try anybody for crimes? The Biden crime family are much more immediately deserving of being put on trial. Now, let me take a quick break. Stay tuned.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Colonel Douglas McGregor is a retired, although he's a pretty active retiree, U.S. Army colonel. He's an author, and he is a foreign policy and defence consultant. He's actually something of a sage. And long ago, he would have been a compatriot of mine from land not far from where I'm broadcasting to you right now in the Scottish Highlands. Douglas McGregor joins us now from the United States. Colonel McGregor, I'm always grateful for your wisdom. I follow you on all platforms. Let me put to you, if I may, the payoff line of a call I just took from Florida. The clue was in the flags that they flew. Dumbo the elephant and a jackass. Is that what you thought when you saw the Congress waving their Ukrainian flags yesterday?
Well, first, congratulations on your new job. I'm sure you're a breath of fresh air.
Thank you so much,
Colonel.
The
second thing is, I think your caller had a point, although I would currently say that we have a government that consists of 525 lobbyists as opposed to representatives, people who are all busy lobbying for money with which they can line their pockets. Now, some of them are just ignorant, which would fall into the donkey character. Some are destructive, which would follow the elephant. But all of them, I'm afraid, with very few exceptions, are bought men, which explains why we are following the policies that we are.
It is extraordinary that it's come to that, Colonel. The United States has often surprised us with the low caliber of its top political representatives. But looking at Joe Biden in the White House and looking at that nest of lobbyists yesterday, I think ineluctably we must reach the conclusion that this is the worst it's ever been, don't you think?
Oh, I think it is. It's hard to imagine it getting any worse, but every time I think it can get worse, it does. Friends of mine inside Washington now refer to Washington as Epstein Island Large. Epstein Island, as you know, is the place where people were set up with underage girls, and it looks like enough of them have been involved in it that they're all blackmailed. And of course, that was Tucker Carlson's most recent allegation that people on the Hill who lead sadly bizarre lives are blackmailed. And if that's the case, they could be compelled to vote in whatever direction the very wealthy and powerful oligarchs in the United States. I say oligarch because someone who's a billionaire hedge fund manager can just as easily buy policy outcomes as an oligarch in Russia or Ukraine. So I think that's our biggest problem. The only way that it will end is with some form of financial collapse, which many of us think is going to happen.
It's time for a new American revolution, isn't it?
Well, the only time you get a revolution, really, let's be frank, is when the population can't eat. That's when we got the French Revolution. And the problems the French Revolution confronted had been around for years. It was only after the population of Paris could not afford to buy bread. I think we could confront a similar situation in the United States with the disruption of supply chains and the destruction of our economy. We're currently living on income that is at least 50% or close to 50% of government income. In other words, the so-called GDP is an illusion. It's something in the neighborhood of less than half of what it appears to be. This can't go on forever. I mean, it just cannot. We just don't know when it's going to happen, but something is going to come along and tip us over. And when that happens, there will be an opportunity to clean house and hopefully start over and put an end to this unnecessary overseas empire that you and your previous caller were talking about.
You need a Hercules to clean the Augean stable. Like me, you're getting on a little. Is there anyone in the wings younger than you and me that's capable of doing that job?
Well, we don't know. I think so, but I'm not sure. My point is that until these events happen, you rarely know who's going to surface. After all, in 1789, Napoleon Bonaparte was an unknown captain in the French army with very poor prospects. All of that within 10 years changes dramatically, and he ends up being the proconsul of France. Now, I'm not predicting the emergence of a Napoleon, and I'm one of these people that really dislikes the notion that any one candidate is going to rescue us. I keep telling people at all my presentations, stop talking about Donald Trump or RFK Jr. or anybody else saving us. You've got to save yourselves. And I think Americans are beginning to figure it out. But we've got a long way to go, and Americans are not well informed. A lot of them aren't interested. They're too busy trying to put bread on the table. Others simply take in the usual nonsense from the mainstream media. So I would say right now, perhaps a third fully understand what's happening in the country and the dangers abroad. But that's about it.
Let's turn to the fruits of yesterday's labors. About $80 billion for Taiwan, for Netanyahu, and above all for Zelensky. His Coke dealer must be delighted.
It's depressing beyond words, because none of this is going to make any difference to the outcome in Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov, the very able foreign minister of Russia, spoke just 24 hours ago and made it clear that if there were any negotiations, that would be fine with them, but that the Russian army would continue to advance and they would complete their task, which is to effectively demilitarize Ukraine, denazify it, and ultimately control the territory that they think is necessary for their national security. So I think we've lost this competition in Ukraine. I'm talking about Washington and its bid to put in a puppet government and threaten Russia. And I think the end of NATO is on the horizon. I think even the Europeans, who are even more misguided and utterly confused than much of the American population, they are going to realize that there's no future in this relationship between us and them, that they too have to save themselves, that they'll have to chart a new destiny for themselves. So I think that'll be the end of NATO. The Russians will then demilitarize what remains of Ukraine. I don't think they'll occupy it or try to govern it, but they will ensure that it's completely demilitarized and can never threaten Russia again. The question then is what happens in the Middle East? And in the Middle East, we're not sure that we're going to escape a major war in that region. Every time we think we may have put a new policy on the rails, we discover that the policy has been shattered by Mr. Netanyahu, who ultimately seems to exert a great deal more influence in Washington than Mr. Biden.
What do you think to Garland Nixon's thesis that all of this clucking that we see being briefed to the media about differences between Biden and Netanyahu is simply a ruse, and that the United States government is actually fully behind what Netanyahu has done and is going to do?
I think they're half right. First of all, I think until recently, it was unconditional support for Israel. Then I think the reality has begun to set in with some of the senior people behind the scenes that are instructing Biden and controlling the Congress, that there's a very real potential for a major war that would draw in Russia and China and other countries and could, frankly, destroy Israel and fatally harm us. And so now I think there's a sense of helplessness, and that helplessness leads to pleas for cooperation with Mr. Netanyahu. Mr. Netanyahu did not get what he wanted, which was a war with Iran. So that's a good thing. That doesn't end the probability of future war with Iran for Israel and us, but at least it's a breathing space. The bad news is he continues to enjoy unconditional support for this program of mass expulsion and murder in Gaza. And as we see within the last 24 hours, 26 people were killed in bombings last night, most of whom I'm told are children. So this nonsense continues, and no one is willing to stand up and stop it. It's a condition of moral bankruptcy in London and in Washington that is clearly without precedent, I would say.
I respect all of that and agree with almost all of it, too. But I think we have to consider the shift in paradigm, Colonel. We've, until now, worried about the fact that Israel wanted a war with Iran. we may be entering an era in which Iran might want a war with Israel. If there is an all-out massacre in Rafah, for example, I now no longer believe that Iran will sit back and watch that, but will in fact use that as the as a launch pad for hegemony across the Muslim world.
Well, there's certainly evidence to support your assertion. I don't think that Iran is delusional in the sense that it thinks it could be the dominant force in the Islamic world because it sits next to Turkey, and the Turks are certainly not going to tolerate that. I think what we're really seeing in addition to Iran is the broader Muslim world coalesce. What hasn't happened yet is that some of the governments that have been dragging their feet, like the Kingdom of Jordan, the government in Egypt, they're not the only ones. I'm not sure they will last much longer because their populations will demand action. And when they don't get it, they'll remove the government. I think Mr. Erdogan has changed his behavior recently because he lost badly in Turkish elections, at least in part for his failure to engage decisively against the Israelis. So I think we're going to see more of the Muslim world engaged than we've seen in centuries. So that much Mr. Netanyahu has achieved. The question is, what do we do? And we seem to be inept and powerless to exert any influence, largely because of what we've been discussing. The people that were cheering and waving the Ukrainian flags are bought men, or they're simply fools. I think that's a pretty good description.
Yeah, fools or knaves or both, of course. That's a possibility also. Much of what you say I concur with. I just think that the military balance of power is beginning to shift, that Iran is a very powerful actor indeed, with far more soft power than Israel, and maybe equivalent hard power. What do you say to those that speculate that Iran's newfound confidence in dealing with Israel is because they've already got themselves nuclear weapons?
You know, every intelligence agency with any degree of credibility that's looked at it has made it very clear that Iran is at most a threshold state. In other words, if they decided to build nuclear warheads, they could do it pretty rapidly. But thus far, we don't have any evidence that they have. I think you should also consider that Pakistan has promised nuclear warheads to Mr. Erdogan in the event that he thinks he needs them. And it would be very easy to get those to Turkey and for the Turks to mount them on missiles. So I think Israel's in a very difficult position. And what worries me is that instead of coming to terms with reality that this mass murder and expulsion policy is the death knell of Israel, and instead stopping it and seeking a way out of this terrible mess that they've created, that they themselves will decide to use a nuclear weapon. Mr. Erdogan has said so publicly, and others in the region have also said, they know what the Israelis have, and the Israelis have made it very clear on numerous occasions that they are willing to use it. That would be disastrous. At that point, I think all bets are off, and that really would be the end of the Israeli state. But I wouldn't exclude that happening first.
Now, you were a Washington insider, as well as a distinguished military man. You counseled President Trump. You know how the Beltway works. And so I ask you candidly, I know it's embarrassing for Americans, but have you ever seen a president like Joe Biden, who, as we would say back in your native Scotland, could scarcely bite his own nails? This is a man you wouldn't send out for a loaf. And yet he's got his finger on your nuclear triggers.
The only ready comparison I can come up with is the last year in office of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Because if you look at his reelection, he was dead or dying when he was reelected. And he was in no position to cope with the advance of the Soviet armies under Stalin into Europe and the eventual conquest and occupation of half of Europe and the world by communism. And so he was a disaster. So in that sense, you're absolutely right. He brought us to a disastrous end of the Second World War, and we're dealing with someone now who is eminently incapable of coping with the reality of what you and I have been discussing. However, there are others behind Biden who are not total fools. What they are, I would say, is simply amateurs. They've been playing at everything as though America is still what it was in 1991. They are ignoring the open borders, which they have deliberately created to dilute our population and essentially erase the American culture and national identity. They are the ones who are releasing criminals onto the street by destroying the justice system. They've ruined the armed forces in terms of morale and capability. It's at an all-time low. So you add that to the equation, and the only thing I can see ahead for the United States right now is total disaster. So perhaps someone will wake up and suddenly realize that the combination of stupidity overseas and self-flagellation at home or suicidal policies at home, somebody has to make a decision to stop one or the other. And I suspect there will be some people who will step forward and say, it's time to pull in overseas. But there's no guarantee. Thus far, there's a lot of self-delusion. You know, we're not 1991. We're not the nation we were. And they don't seem to want to recognize that. They still think that there's no one who can challenge us militarily. All they need to do is take a long look at Russia and figure out that's not true. Then look at Iran, look at Turkey, look at the rest of the region. The assumption that these countries are backward, that they don't have people of high intelligence and ability, that they are not technologically sophisticated, is fundamentally wrong. But that stupidity persists inside the Beltway. We grossly underestimate everyone, and we overestimate ourselves.
Well, that's a great note to end on, a great pearl of wisdom. You and I are both spring chickens compared to Joe Biden. I'm back in office. Shouldn't you be running for office, Colonel?
I don't think so. I'm not clever like you, George. You're a much better political figure and a better political thinker than I am. I'm a lifelong professional soldier, and I still trust too many people and believe they're honest when they're not. I'd fail miserably in politics.
Colonel McGregor, you certainly don't fail as our blue chip guest on the Mother of All Talk Shows. Thanks for your wisdom once again. Well, let me take a quick break, and then I'm sure you'll want to call in about what you've just heard. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Morahman is in New Jersey, but wants to talk about Israel. Most welcome, Morahman. What would you like to say?
Good evening, Ms. Honorable George Galloway. I'm from New Jersey. My name is Morahman. And first of all, I would like to give you assalamu alaikum to you and to all of your team members.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you very much for that.
And I would like to thank you because one of the biggest requests I would like to keep it here for you and for your team that in this dire situation of this current world affairs, your programs and your courages for the oppressed people, please keep it up. Do not stop because in this situation, people like we need much needed. You are much needed by the people of this world right now. They will try from all aspects of their efforts to keep you up silent. Please don't be silent. Keep it up because without you, the world will be in darkness right now. So for this moment, and also I would like to thank for your courage because every single day you speak up for Palestinians people. I mean, and I would like also point out that how United Kingdom, country like United Kingdom, that we admire their system, their human rights commitment, they're supporting Israeli government and selling arms to the Israeli government, and that by these arms, they're carrying out genocides. I mean, that's the question right now I lead for you, so that the people of this world and the people of the British people, they be aware of this situation, that it is very, very frustrating and unacceptable. The British government and selling arms to Israel, and by these arms, they're carrying out genocides on Gaza and around the world. I have a very limited time right now because I was waiting for a long time, but I will be happy to join, I mean, next time. But once again, thank you so much for your courage and for your activities. Please don't leave, keep it up for the people, because without people like you, the world will be in darkness. Sustain.
Thank you very much for your very powerful words of praise. I'm deeply affected by them. I not only will keep it up, I'm increasing my output. I've got another show now called Have It Out with Galloway, which has a video wall, which is a new dimension. We're trialling it. Hopefully, we'll be able to bring it onto the Mother of All talk shows. It's free to air. You can use it. Anyone can use it. You can rebroadcast it. I'm hoping that a very powerful and important collection of radio stations in California will begin broadcasting the Mother of All talk shows right after we do on FM radio on a very powerful transmitter, reaching more and more and more people in the United States as we are reaching them around the world. As long as God gives me breath, I'll be speaking. And I might be right, I might be wrong, but you'll know that I believe what I'm saying. No one can buy me, no one can rent me, no one can intimidate me. I'm afraid only of God. And if I fall, after me is the wonderful Gayatri and my six children, and as the much greater man Che Guevara said, it matters not if I fall. What matters is how many people race forward to pick up my weapon. Now, my weapon is this show. My weapon are these words. And if I don't fall but I'm knocked down, my words, my work will multiply. Imagine how many views, if that were to happen, for the words I've already spoken. They will not succeed in stopping me, stopping us, stopping this great movement that I believe is underway across the Western world. I'm told the YouTube comments are full of love for Gayatri. Well done. Other comments. Rachel Thompson says, democracy is a good idea. Perhaps someday we will have one. Brilliant. Florin Estratoi, I-S-T-R-A-T-O-I-U. Forgive me, Florin, for my mispronunciation. I am voting for you in the absence of Corbyn. You should try harder to persuade him to make a new party. Well, I sit next to him in Parliament and talk about little else when the interminably boring speeches are going on. Zaid is in Seattle, wants to talk about Gaza. Zaid, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Galloway. I just wanted to ask you about the pier or the port that they're building on the coast of Gaza, and looks like what they're saying is, oh, this is just to deliver aid. I don't buy that for a second. Do you think that's a port to put American or NATO troops on the ground in Gaza or even South Lebanon?
No, I don't. I don't think they would dare to do that. What I said in Parliament, I still believe that this port is intended to be the port at which ships will pull in to deport the Palestinians from their own land. But that requires two things. It requires, first of all, the Palestinians to agree to do as their grandparents did in 1948 and leave their land, allow the thieves to steal their land and enjoy it for themselves. I don't believe that will happen, that the great majority of Palestinians in Gaza will never leave it. They will either die in it now or later. The Second thing that that would need is the defeat of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza. And I don't believe that's going to happen either. Look at the firepower Israel has. Look at the firepower it has used. Three Hiroshimas have been dropped on Gaza. This huge army, Navy and Air Force, has tried for 7 months to extinguish the Palestinian resistance. And they're still standing. They're still fighting. Officers and men and women of the occupation force are still falling. And if they do decide to invade Rafah on the ground, believe me, that will be the mother of all battles, as well as the mother of all slaughters. Ellie in New York wants to talk about Israel. Ellie, go ahead, take your time.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Galloway. This is Ellie from New York calling you again. Well, I have been watching your show, of course, and regarding the Iran-Israel attacks that have taken place recently, I think at the end of the day, of course, the Zionist plan is to expel the Palestinians and, above all, rebuild the temple. This is what the extreme and radical parties in Israel want, and they will not stop at it. And of course, then the big picture is for Israel to continue, or for the Zionists to continue their lobbying around the world in order to keep propelling the state, right? Now, also, I just heard Mr. McGregor, Colonel McGregor, and I agree with many things. I do agree with the fact that we have a problem with the border. But his comment regarding the plan to let all these immigrants in, to dilute the population, the American population, and to erase the American culture and national identity, I strongly disagree with that. I think the American culture, it's a melting pot. And yes, we do have a problem with the border, but who is American and who is not American? So in that regard, I would have that objection with Mr. McGregor, and I'm fine to disagree with him. But the Iran-Israel issue is obviously a spark that will not let off. They have the opportunity now. Israel will not stop. They have the world at their feet, basically. And there's no reason for them to stop to achieve the goal that they have had for decades. That was basically my comment, Mr.
Well, that's a very wide-ranging and powerful call. I don't have time left to do justice to it. It was a very cogent and challenging set of points that you made there, Ellie, and we'll have to leave some of those issues to another night. But I'm less pessimistic than you. I believe that political change is coming in the United States and in the United Kingdom, and that Israel does not control the United States. The United States controls Israel. Its political class is bought and paid for as lobby men, as Colonel McGregor so powerfully said. But these jokers on the floor of the Congress are not the real power in America. The real power lies elsewhere in America. It lies in the deep state. It lies in the corporate world, it lies in the top brass of the military. And if the fools in Congress can be bought for a few thousands of dollars, the enduring interests of the United States, the deep interests of the United States, will eventually have to tell. and the deep interests of the United States are eventually in accepting that their time as Rome, their time as an empire is coming to an end, and that some kind of power sharing in the world will have to be concluded. Otherwise, the complete collapse and failure of the United States with all its strength and wealth will be the result. And I don't believe that the people who really run America, the real power in America, will allow that to happen. Our job, yours and mine, and the audience that we're talking to now, a record audience of well over 25,000 people have watched live this evening, 455 calls to the show this evening. The task that we have is to raise the cost for our political representatives of ignoring the true interests of our country, ignoring the true opinions of our countrymen and women. And we're on the right track to do that. Last call is from Gordon in Lewis. I don't know if that's Lewis in the England or Lewis in the Scottish Hebrides. We'll soon find out. Gordon, welcome.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatul barakatuh. And I don't do that in Gaelic very often. Trust me on that. Anyway, George,
it's Lewis.
It's a delight.
It's the Isle of Lewis. How wonderful.
Out in Hebrides. Anyway, my friend, it's a delight to see you back where you belong, making the voice of the people. And this is a message for all the people, everybody that's listening. Unity is what they fear the most. That's written in a whole bunch of tones. And people, put your pen to paper, never mind doing your emails, put your pen to paper, put a stamp on it and send it to the person that you've got a disinterest in and saying, not in my name. It's as simple as that. That's how we're going to win. Anyway, George, it's a delight to see you back, sir.
Gordon, I can't tell you how happy I am. It's the last call of the night, but it's the call that cheered me most. Delivered in your beautiful Hebridean English and not a bad and quite passable rendition of Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Now, the poll has closed at virtually 49,000 votes. 98, 91, 92 and 94% have answered in the affirmative. The question: are the UK and the US rogue states? How incredible a majority on such a vast poll is that? I've no time left. Just I wanted to tell you that we had a record week on TikTok. We had 1.6 million views on our Moats videos on TikTok. So we are breaking records in live audience. We're breaking records in the clips. The Scott Ritter interview last week has almost 1 million views alone on one clip, one interview. And Scott will be back every Wednesday for the rest of this emergency. It's been marvellous for me. I hope it was for you. And if it was, come back on Wednesday at the same time and bring another viewer with you. Why don't you? My voice is going because I spoke at big rallies on Monday, on Tuesday, and on Friday with very poor speaking equipment. If you want me to give a speech, give me a decent microphone with a decent amplifier, and then I won't be coughing and spluttering my way through.